doesn't want to disrupt some shit, you know? If you like earning the income you get, turn off this podcast. If you don't like, disrupt what you're doing, do something about it.
You're listening to the Real Business Connections Network.
Real Business Connections Network.
Powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. Subscribe now and check us out at realbusinessconnections.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone, to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. If you love to learn, be inspired, and succeed, we're here to speak and teach. I'm your host, Ben Albert. I believe if you're not living, you're dying. If you're not growing, you're withering. And if you're not engaged, you can turn this off right now. Because we here at LST are lifelong learners. And listen, I'm not your guru. I'm an ordinary guy on a journey to learn from the experts. My goal is to host each conversation with a beginner's mindset, learn, and let the experts speak and teach their truths. Join us! Oh yeah, and don't forget to subscribe. This episode is brought to you completely free. Get some stake in the game here. My fee for the show only takes a few moments. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Bonus points. Please leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right, let's get started. Welcome once again to Learn, Speak, Teach on the Real Business Connections Network. I'm here today with Steve D. Sims. Steve, how the heck are you?
I'm good and happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to have you. Guys, if you don't know who Steve is, you now know. Some refer to Steve as the real-life Wizard of Oz. He is the founder and CEO of the luxury concierge service, Bluefish. Bluefish is internationally famous, ultimately once-in-a-lifetime experiments. I mean, we'll talk about it in a moment. Elton John, Journey, all sorts of fun stuff. He also has published a couple best-selling books, Bluefishing, The Art of Making Things Happen, and more recently, and I actually just read it, another bestseller, Go for Stupid. Steve, talk so the camera goes on you. It's actually in a speaker view, so we might not have saw that. Pick that book right back up.
There you go. That's what it looks like. There's my little name. That's me.
Let me tell you, and I'll let you do most of the talking, but I will tell you, I love Go for Stupid because I am notorious for asking the dumbest questions. And let me tell you why I ask dumb questions. You never know what the listener needs. Mm-hmm. You never know what they're curious about. And I like to put myself in there. So let's start with a stupid question. How the heck did you meet Elton John?
I asked. that's the weird thing about it. You know, so many people are petrified. For a start, let's break it down.
Okay.
I'm an introvert. I play an extrovert very well, but I'm an introvert. And what that means is when introverts do anything, it's got to be worth it. You know, I'm going to this party because I've got to have this. I'm going to a networking event because that has to happen. We don't care about being in the center of attention. We care about moving the needle. You know, whether it be getting ourselves uncomfortable, learning, growing, becoming more impactful, networking, whatever it is. So we do that. We're like that. I wanted to work with Sir Elton John during his Oscar party. And I knew that I needed to do this. It was something I really focused on. I found people around his court. I started finding out where they were, started communicating with them, working my way up the channel, and then ended up working for Sir Elton John's Oscar party for 8 years. Met him quite a lot of times during that period. And he's a cool cat. He's strong. He's direct. He's powerful. He is an icon. He's got an edge to him. But you know, hey, been around the block enough. He's allowed to.
He's got an edge to him. What does that mean?
Sometimes he can come across as a bit abrupt. Sometimes coarse. But he doesn't pull his punches. He's very direct. A lot of people have tried to abuse him over his life, and he's very strong about those flakes. But he's a very strong, powerful man. He's very committed to what he sees value and benefit in.
Yeah, I mean, if someone's wronged you a couple of times, you have to say strong and stiff. I can appreciate that.
Yeah, and in the music industry, you know, I'll put it this way. I wouldn't want his life. Now, we know he's got more money than probably a small planet, but I wouldn't want the life and what he went through in the heart. The guy's ending his concerts this year, and I was boggled to realize that there's never been a year in his life where he hasn't actually been on tour. Imagine every year singing the same tune. Now, I do 4 or 5 podcasts sometimes, you know, going back before the launch of the book. I was doing 4 or 5 podcasts in a day. And now I try to reduce it, so I only do 4 or 5 in a week. And for a lot of people, that's still a lot. And for me, it's a lot. Imagine every single year singing the same tunes again and again and again, traveling around the planet, being away from your family. That would get on my nerves.
You know, not to ask you the same tune, but a lot of my listeners don't know you yet. Tell us the tune, the story of the journey, Endeavor, because that was one of my favorites.
Well, it's a kind of I'm happy with those questions because I realize, unlike Elton, there's a lot of people out there that don't know the story. So it's different for me. If I'm singing the same story to the same people, I ain't going to want to do that. But a lot of people don't know who I am, and that's absolutely fine. But I do these podcasts for 2 reasons. One, so you do get to know who I am. But B, to challenge you to actually do something different. I want you to strive to change the way you act. And I want you to turn off of this podcast and go, shit, I'm going to do something different. I am going to disrupt. I am going to create. And that's what I want. So you want to know the journey story? The actual journey story or the rock band journey story? Which one are you after?
The journey through the journey story.
All right, the journey through the journey. That's good. I like that. So I'm basically the same as everyone else in the planet. I started off as an aggravated kid that didn't know shit. And it was that aggravation that caused me to go and find stuff. If I was a settler, you know, I'd still be, I don't know, flipping burgers or working on a building site. But most entrepreneurs, we're not settlers. We're aggravated. And it propels us to do things. We want more out of life. How can this happen? How can I create? How can I work smarter rather than hard? All those kind of things. So I actually realized that everyone that was around me was a broke-ass biker. And I realized I'm a broke-ass biker. So until I broke that cycle and started hanging around with people that were smarter, more desired, more aggravated, more compelling, more successful, more frustrated. Unless I changed my room, I was going to stay an ingredient of that room. And this bothered me. Even from a young age, knowing nothing, I knew that that wasn't going to be my future. And so I went out to try and communicate with rich people, powerful people. I didn't know how to do it. The first thing I did was try to get jobs where rich people go, like tailors and security guards and bankers and insurance people and jet charters and yacht charters. You know me, I'm 240 pound of ugly. Can you imagine me stood there going, want a boat? You know, it didn't come across right. I wasn't very good. So then I started other things and I ended up finding out the most affluent people shared the same problem. They wanted better stories to tell their friends. You know, they didn't want to sit on a beach. They wanted to experience something. They didn't want to go to a museum. They wanted the museum to shut down for them, you know, and to be able to have a fine glass of champagne. Is that getting a private tour at 9 o'clock at night? They wanted that. Now, for 25 years, I was the concierge, and you mentioned it, Bluefish. We don't actually own that company anymore. That's now gone. But for 25 years, I was the concierge to the richest, most powerful people in the planet. Now, I've always said I wasn't in the business I was in, because what I did was I would do this for these powerful people, not because I cared about going backstage at a concert or, you know, sitting front row or doing private meet and greets or getting drum lessons with Guns N' Roses or piano lessons with Elton. None of that impressed me. What I wanted to do was sit down and have a dinner with you for 2 hours. Just go, hey, Ben, how come you're so rich? How come you're so successful? How come you're so impactful? I wanted that 2 hour education with the most powerful people in the planet so I could then go and operate it. You see, if you're sitting in a room and you're sitting in a room with, I don't know, say pick people, Warren Buffett and Elon Musk, and there's just you firing any question you want at these two people. And because you've looked after them, you're getting these answers, okay? So you're getting these two people answering your questions. What kind of utter moron do you have to be not to walk away from that table and action the advice you've been given?
Right.
You know, so that's what I was doing. I was trying to hang around with rich people so I could action the advice the way I spoke, handed up.
Real quick question on that. Is that part of why you host your own podcast? Shout out your podcast. And is that part of why you started the show itself?
So my podcast is The Art of Making Things Happen. And I've always said that if podcasting existed in the 90s, I'd have never bothered with a concierge firm. You know, I just literally wanted to do that. So, yes, I was doing a in-person live version of a podcast.
There it is. There it is.
And it worked. It worked.
I wanted to take a moment to pin that because your podcast is incredible. And that's why I have this podcast, so I can talk to Mr. Sims. So go on with the story. So concierge, you have this time. Where does it start to blow up? I mean, where does Journey come into play, you know, as an example?
So what we noticed was that people are usually quite scared, if not terrified, of saying what they want. And I found that kind of weird and compelling at the same time. You know, we'd go, I'd like to do this. But you won't say what the full dream is. So we recognized this very early on. So, and this is how the actual title of the book came about. You see, we had the title of the book, Go for Stupid. We had that before there was even a book to stick it on. You know, we've had that title for probably about 18 years.
Wow.
But what we would do was a client would come to us and they'd go, hey, I'd like to go to the London Fashion Week. And we'd be like, okay, we'll come back to you, let you know what we can do. And we would sit down in the morning and we'd go around the table with all the requests we were getting. And we'd be like, okay, I've got a guy who wants to go to the London Fashion Week. That's what he's asked for. How can we make that request stupid? And that's what we used to say. Because you see, here's a funny thing.
Mm-hmm.
If I say to you, hey, your podcast, your business, let's go for the impossible. Let's make it impossible. You know, let's achieve it. And then I say to you, hey, Ben, your business, your podcast, let's get a stupid goal. Let's go for stupid here. Okay. Now, two things happen. And I was watching your eyes and I was watching your face as I was asking those questions. When someone goes for something that's impossible, the first thing they do is they pinch their lips, they grit themselves, and they go, yeah, I'm going to go for the impossible. I'm going to do it. And there's all that constriction and resistance that comes into that body. Yeah, when you say to someone, hey, you know that goal you want of $250,000? Let's make that goal stupid. Let's go for $1 million. Yeah, let's do this. All of a sudden, when you start using the word stupid, you start smiling because kids smile. Kids are curious. Kids don't have parameters. You don't dream and then during the dream go, whoa, you can't do that. It's impossible to float on a flying carpet because it's your dream. Dreams have no parameters. Kids have no parameters. But as adults, we get these parameters, and 99% of them are self-inflicted by us. We tell ourselves, no, 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 you can't do that. You can't dance. You can't go out with that girl. You can't apply for that job. You can't walk in that room. How many of us that are listening to this podcast, and yeah, I'm talking to you, how many of you have imposter syndrome? You walk into a room full of successful people and you go, well, shit, I should not be there. And so what happens? You push through it until you realize that they're just same as you, or worse, you run away. How many times does that happen?
I'm getting the metrics. I had 40 million hands raised. 40 million people. There's a family in Cambodia that listened to the show that didn't raise their hand. Everybody else did, Steve.
We all do. It's terrible. We inflict those on. But when you actually can be famous and go, hey, let's go for a stupid goal, then childlike immaturity, adventure, curiosity, and the willingness to disrupt suddenly comes up to, and it's fun. I'm talking to you now and you're smiling about that idea. Who doesn't want to disrupt some shit? You know, if you like earning the income you get, turn off this podcast. If you don't like, disrupt what you're doing, do something about it. And that's where it all came from. So anytime anyone would ask us to do something, we used to ask ourselves, how can we make this stupid? And the story that you were hinting on was we had a client that wanted, get this, to meet the rock band Journey. He literally wanted to shake their hands and get a photograph. That was it. And we thought, how can we make it stupid? So we got him pulled up on stage halfway through a concert in San Diego, and he sang five tunes as the shortest-term lead singer of the rock band Journey, live on stage in a packed auditorium at what at the time was called the Cricket Amphitheater in San Diego. That's how far we took it.
There it is. And we don't have to be going for stupid in that regard in every micro moment. Talk a little bit in the book, Go for Stupid. You talked about a bartender that far exceeded your expectations.
Kenneth
is a great example of going for stupid and overexceeding and disrupting in small micro moments. Am I wrong? Tell me a little bit about Kenneth. Tell that story.
So I was in a bar. It's been known to happen, but it was it was in a hotel, and I had literally just landed, and I had to shake myself up because I was on stage in like a couple of hours. And I'd checked into this hotel, dropped my stuff off, wanted to have a quick bite to eat before I got in the car to went over to the gig. And the bar looked pretty decent. And I actually said to the guy that came over that was giving us lunch, he gave us a cocktail menu. Now it was lunchtime. I very, very rarely drink anything at lunchtime. But he had some of these cocktails on there and they looked quite interesting. I said to him, look, I wouldn't mind a little pick-me-up, to be honest with you. So, yeah, I'll have an old-fashioned. Can you do an old-fashioned? And I said to him, I don't want to be a prick, but make sure it's a good old-fashioned or don't even bother, you know? And that challenge to him, I think, must have made him a bit nervous because he's walked over to the bartender, said to this bartender about what I just said to him, and this bartender, just gay fella, literally just comes skipping. He was just a ball of energy. Comes like skipping over to me and said, you know, what do you like? How do you like it? And almost interviews me on this drink. And I said, look, you know, if it's no good, mate, you know, I don't want it. And I was a bit tired. I wasn't really very responsive to his, you know, his mannerisms and his overexcitement. He was way too jolly for me at that moment. And he went, I heard what you want, but I'm not going to give it to you. I'm going to give you something I think you'll love even better, and goes off.
Ooh.
And I'm like, hang on a minute. I haven't exactly been very friendly. I haven't exactly given him much flex room to do anything other than a bloody good old fashioned. But he's fronted me and he said, no, 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 I'm not giving you what you want, but I'll give you something you love. And I'm thinking, that's pretty freaking ballsy,
yeah,
you know? And I'm like, All right. And I was hooked. I was curious. And he goes skipping back behind the bar. Yeah, he was a life force. He is a life force. And so he's behind the bar and he comes over and he gives me this drink. To say it was an old-fashioned would be wrong. To say it was brilliant would be accurate. And I was like, this is something. The guy's confronted me and given me something based on a brief conversation. And I really admired that strength of character. Now, here's the weird thing. I fell in love with that hotel. And I told a couple of friends, and I was up in San Francisco for about four nights, and I think maybe second, third night, I went, wow, what a wonderful hotel. And the guy looked at me and said, are you fucking kidding me? I said, no, it's a brilliant hotel. He said, why is it brilliant? And I went, oh, first day there, this Kenneth did this, he did that, and then I got that, and I went back the following night. Kenneth was there that evening, I got this. And he said, so you're basing the hotel on Kenneth? And I went, yeah, I suppose I am. He said, come with me. And we went to the rooftop bar of this hotel where all the scantily clad women were serving drinks. And we sat down and he went, get a drink. And I thought, well, that's, you know, okay, you know. So I tried to get the attention of someone to get me a drink. And oh my God, was that hard. And then I finally did get their attention and the drink was shit. Then they overpriced me for the drink. And I'm like, this, he went, this is what we got. You got Kenneth. And I realized at the time, my opinion of everything was based on him. How many people, and I write an entire chapter on this in the book, how many people base your company on the single interaction they have with some point of it? And is that point a Kenneth? See, for me, this was one of the greatest. I was already committed that every time I go back to San Francisco, I'm staying in that hotel. Until I realized that it wasn't the hotel that had actually grabbed me. It was Kenneth.
It was Kenneth. So as a leader, how do we ensure that we have Kenneths in our company? Kenneths surrounding us. Kenneths. Yeah. Front right. Someone walks in the door. We want a Kenneth.
Yeah, we absolutely do, because you may not be having a Kenneth. You may be having one of these asswipes that were up on the top floor of that hotel that suddenly convinced me it was a shitty hotel. That is why I'm calling out Kenneth, but I'm not calling out the hotel and wouldn't stay at the hotel again. So what you first got to do is you've actually got to write down who can connect with anybody in your company from a front row perspective. So anyone that comes into your company probably isn't going to speak to the cleaner, probably isn't going to speak to the person doing your IT or website, but maybe they'll speak to your assistant, your secretary, sales, you know, your son, your child that works in the company. We're entrepreneurs. We have a lot of family members that work. So write down everyone that 9 times out of 10 has interaction with people coming, and then ask yourselves critically, what is the difference between each one of those? And I'm going to tell you this. Why don't you set them up? Why don't you go out for dinner and then phone one of those people up and go, hey, I'm looking at doing this. You know, how good is your company? Find out the response you get.
The reason I'm smiling is because I would do that in that accent myself.
Yeah, we used to do that. We used to phone up our staff when we had the concierge phone. We'd go, I want a pink giraffe by 5 o'clock. Can you get it? And just see what the response would be like and see what they would say. We used to wind it. That was one of our silly things in the office. We used to wind each other up with ridiculous requests. But nowadays, I urge you to do it to discover whether or not all of your front line are Kenneths.
What if I'm asking myself, I don't have a Kenneth. What kind of mindset is required? Let's say you want to be a Kenneth, but you feel like you're not. What is the mindset required to become that kind of, or is some people just not meant to be that kind of, you know, server. Not server as in serving like food.
No, but. I get what you mean. So there's a number of questions there. Let's break that down because you threw three things at me.
Yeah, I got a bad habit of asking about 17 at a time.
If you haven't got a Kenneth, who have you got? And that's the first problem. If you've got arseholes, then you know what to do. I'm not saying that you need a Kenneth, but I am saying you need to get rid of the arseholes. Mm. So if you've got someone that's not a Kenneth, don't let them talk to your prospects. That's the first thing. Remove the ability for them to be able to create an experience or an emotion by not allowing them to interact. That's the first thing. They may be fantastic at the website. They may be fantastic at fulfillment. They may be fantastic at creative. Don't give them a phone. Don't let them talk to the end user. That's the first thing. Secondly, you, if you're not Kenneth, is your job to interact with prospects? Then you need to better become a Kenneth. You've got to learn how to communicate because you could be losing business because of your attitude. And if you really hate people, hate business, are just terrible at doing this, then get somebody else. Bring someone else in as your front man. You know, that's what you've got to do. And so you've really got to analyze what you've got, what is the purpose of it, and if you've got the opposite side of it, then get it out of the front line.
Makes perfect sense. And those people have already turned the podcast off by now. So we're talking to the gold, the best humans right now listening on Steve Sims. One thing I learned from Chris Van Vliet is really what we achieve is a direct relationship to the questions we ask.
Oh,
and
yeah.
you further hammered that down in Go for Stupid. My question for you is, how do I ask better questions?
By asking wrong ones. I learned very early on that if I didn't get the answer I wanted, it was because I was asking the wrong question. So I used to go up to people and I'd be like, hey, how come you're rich and I'm not? And that literally, I know it's horrific, isn't it? I would go up to incredibly powerful people and ask that question and they would look at me almost fear in their eyes that I'm going to mug them. and I wasn't getting any response. So then I changed it to, how come you're wealthy and I'm not? And I thought, wealthy, that'll do it, you know? But then they used to talk to me about wealth being peace of mind, finding meditation, marrying their wife, having kids, finding the Lord. And I'd be like, well, I'm not going to marry your wife or join your church. How does that help me? There was nothing tactical in that. Works for you, but it doesn't help me. And so the third tweak of that question, and remember this, if you get a bad answer, it's probably because you've asked a bad question. So my third tweak of that question was, how come you are successful and I'm not? And that's what I used to say. Hey, how come you're successful and I'm not, you know? And I would get people going, oh, well, I look at business like this, or I focus on culture, or I work 4 hours a day and I cram everything, and the rest of the time I'm with my family rejoicing, or I'll work 4 days a week. Or yeah, I would get now tactics. And so I would get up from that breakfast table, that dinner table, lunch, whatever, and go, right, this is what I'm going to do. And I always used to have these little pads in my pocket, and I would step out. Sometimes I would go to the toilet and just do it in the toilet, write the notes down in the toilet, because everything was coming so fast. You know, I knew I was going to. But 9 times out of 10, I'd leave the meeting, step around the corner, and then quickly just make notes. And there were times when I'd be around the corner of the building, and my client would walk around the corner. I'd be like, oh, hey, John, how you doing? You know, and I would just, and I'm making notes about him, you know, and I'm doing all these things. So I would take all of these notes down, and then I would get home and I would translate those into actionable steps. And then from those actionable steps, I'd start. See, the beautiful thing about a mindset is you can change it in a nanosecond.
Mm.
and your attitude, your focus, your relationship with you can be changed in a second, can be changed in a heartbeat. But again, as we said earlier, what kind of Morwan do you need to be to have all of this knowledge and then physically choose not to do anything with it? That I just found incredible.
That's this guy for almost 30 years of my life. And I'll be honest, I would get in my own way and then talk about imposter syndrome, talk about struggle. I would have the answer to a question, but you better believe I didn't open my mouth, because if I were to try to answer that and I wasn't living in alignment with the answer, work out, do this, eat this food, reach out to this person, I had the tactics, but I was getting in my own way. So I already kind of answered the question I was going to, this is one answer to it, but the question I was going to ask is, why are you successful and I'm not?
Because I listen to people and I action things. And that's the key. I always, and again, it sounds corny, but it's in my book. I talk about diet books. And I say to people, and I've done this many times, I've said to people in an audience, stick your hand up if you've lost weight after you bought a diet book or by buying a diet book. And you get people go, yeah, you know, and they put your hand up. And I went, hang on a minute. You've lost weight by the purchase, or have you lost weight by actioning the information in the book? And that's the key differentiator. How many of us go out, and there's a horrible statistic. There was a statistic. Someone said it's like 80% of people that buy books don't read them. And I find that ridiculous until I look at my shelf and realize I've still got books that I haven't got around to.
Right.
So I think that's too high a number. In fact, I pray it's too high a number. But I think 50% of people probably buy a book and then just like shove it down on the couch and never get around to opening it. And that's the problem. Mm. The power, the benefit, the success is not in the purchase, it's in the action. And that's what I do. I action, and I action badly. And I'll tell you what that means. I'm a great believer that the first time you do anything, it'll be shit. Great believer in that. You cannot be perfect out of the gate because you don't know what you're doing. So what I realized is if I action everything badly, kind of lets me off the hook. Now, if I say to you, hey, here's a canvas, here's a load of paint, here's a load of brushes, paint me a masterpiece. How terrified of you to even put that paint on the canvas? You're petrified, because I've actually said to you, not paint me a painting, paint me a masterpiece. But if I said to you, draw me a stick man, I'm doing it. There you go. There's a stick. You done it.
I was going to do that either way.
Yeah, there you go. A masterpiece and a stick man. See, that's the whole point. If you realize that you've just got to break that duck's egg by actually just doing something,
right,
then it's the action that's important. And the reaction of that action is your mind goes, right, we're in. We're going to do this. And that's what goes. I know, and I don't know how many I've done. I think it's like 300-something episodes now on my podcast. Guarantee you, the first ones I did was shit. In fact, the story is, and this was something – gentleman by the name of Ari Mizell did this. I was at an entrepreneur event, and he was talking about how to set up a podcast. So I literally just went on Facebook and I went, hey, should I do a podcast? I had a bunch of people going, yeah, do it. So I went, all right, fine, I'll do it. So I went up to Ari and I said, look, I've spoken to a few people. I'm going to do a podcast. And he said, great. There's a strategy that you've got to stick to when it's new. And I went, okay, what is that? He said, you've got to record 18 podcasts. Record all 18 before you post them up on Apple. This is how you post them up on Apple. This is how you get a Libsyn account. This is how you do it. Mm-hmm. But before you post them up, do all 18, get them in the can, and then call me up. And I went, fine, done. So I think it probably took me 4 months and I had 18 podcasts done. So I phoned him up and I've gone, right, okay, I've got 18 podcasts. How do I load them up? You know, what do I do? Do I hashtag? Is it the algorithms? Is it the magic? 18 numbers do something to the algorithm of your podcast? He went, no. Now what you got to do, you got to listen to the first one, listen all the way through to the 18, and ask yourself, do you want people listening to this? Because I guarantee you, most of those are shit. And this is Ari saying that. And he's got a great saying, get going, then get good. He said, listen to the podcast. He said, because you can delete them and redo them. And out of 18, we kept four.
Four.
We kept four out of 18. And I went back to all the people that I had interviewed, and they were good guests because I know good people. And like Jim Quick and Chris Voss and Jay Abraham. And I went back to these people and I went, do you know, there was a technical issue. And they were like, oh, really? What was it? And I went, the technical issue was on my side. I sounded shit. So I need to redo it. And thankfully, all of them, I think, bar one, said, yeah, let's do it again. And then the other one I got, you know, 6 months later or something. But yeah, I actually, I did 18. Then I only released four. And since then, even now, I do podcasts and I have fun with it. But I used to be a bit nervous. So I would say I'm getting better. In a year's time, I'll probably be a lot better than I am today. And in 10 years' time, I'll be a lot better than I will be in a year's time. But that's the focus. It's the action that makes you brilliant, not the reading about it, not the knowing about it, not the answers to the question. You literally have to start. And again, to quote Ari, get going, then get good.
Get going and then get good. I know personally, people heard it in the last episode. Carla Fowler, she's brilliant, went to Brown, PhD, MD. I had this big, thick bio in front of me, and I couldn't read it. I think I couldn't read your bio today. I think I'm seeing double. I actually had some Benadryl. But I've done hundreds of these. I've done hundreds of these. And I still have those moments.
I'm still not
a rock star pro. You mentioned you don't get perfect right off the bat. I mean, you're far from it right off the bat. You think you ever get perfect?
I hope not. I hope not, because I think perfection surely demonstrates the end of the growth. And I don't ever think I want that. Like people say, like I'm a coach. You know that. I coach. But that doesn't make me an expert. It just makes me a serial failure. It makes me a continuous student. I'm not an expert. I'm not perfect. I've just failed way more times than you, and I have an idea of certain things. But I'm a great believer that I never want to hit perfection. I would hate to be, well, great, Steve, you're perfect. And now I'd be like, well, what do I do now then? You know, because you can't do perfect twice. It's only perfect once, you know, so, and that would be terrible.
Oh, you could be perfect twice because to my grandma, I'm perfect. So then I'd have to get
there. You go. Yeah, there you go.
You mentioned you're a coach. It's funny how this all things happen very fast. So got your book to be on the show. I'm going to read the book because, I mean, it's Steve Sims. And it was an incredible book, Go for Stupid. I'm reading the book. I forget where it was, but I clicked the link. Then I have the whole free trial, like 3 months free. So if anyone gets the book, it's not like this is a complicated hoops to jump in. It was right in the book. Before you know it, I have 3 months free virtual training where basically you can pick up your phone and have Steve with you 24/7, which is pretty badass. And then I get an email saying I'm supposed to join some Facebook community. So I click on the community. That was free. All I did is buy a book. The community was free. And then one of your executive assistants say, hey, do you want a 30-minute coaching call for free with Steve as well? So just last week, we did that coaching call.
Yep.
A lot there, so I'm going to ask just one question. Why do you do those free coaching calls? Because theoretically, there could be thousands of people asking you.
Yeah, so what we do is there are thousands that ask. And so what we do is we cherry pick out by literally just, you know, lucky draw. You got lucky.
lucky draw. I was about to yell, I made it. I made the cut, but I guess I just got lucky. You're supposed to tell me I made it.
It was only you. You were the only one that was important to us. But we do get a lot of people that actually ask for this. We literally just put it into a, you know, digital bucket and then pull one out and then do them. But I wanted to do them because there's a number of things that they do. One, they establish a relationship and rapport with people above and beyond the book. You know, you're talking about it now. We've had communication. We virtually met, okay? So I'm no longer just a bunch of words on a book. We've met. We know each other now, okay? So there's that. Secondly, we're in a content world. We're in a world today where if you are a coach, mentor, trainer, branding agency, marketing agency, people want to see, well, how good are you? I want to see a test. So that's why we do the 3-month free at Sims Distillery. We go, hey, we want you to see what we do. If you like it, stay. If you don't, just push disconnect. We're good. But we want to give you the chance. We want you to taste what it is we do. And then the coaching, the 30-minute coaching, as you know, we didn't talk much before we hit record. I ask you for your name, what are you doing, what the problem is, which puts me immediately on the spot. And I'm like, all right, so, okay, this is the problem. How can we crack it? And we go into it. So a lot of people now can actually watch those kind of things and go, this is the kind of person I want in my corner. I like how he does this. So it gives me content. It gives me the ability to show other people how I react. It engages those that were on the fence as to whether or not engage me as a coach. And it helps me with more content that I can distribute over all social platforms. So it's a great benefit to all of us and everyone involved in it.
It is. And all I did, Steve, I didn't realize. Everyone hearing this now knows this is a whole thing. I just bought the book for a few dollars on Amazon. Yeah. And before you know it, you know, we get to build a fruitful relationship. And anyone listening that doesn't have, what is it, 10 bucks or less? I mean, hard copies probably a little more.
I think the hard copies, $22, I think. I think the Kindle is less than 10 bucks. Mm-hmm. The paperback comes out in early 2023, which will probably be around about 12 bucks. So put it this way, for the price of a good few cups of coffee, you get all of this.
100%. And I'm not trying to fork out thousands of dollars, but the first 10 people that can't afford it, which hopefully zero, that needs me to buy the book for them, it's on me. It's not a big, it's worth the investment. This isn't even me just trying to promote you. I mean, it was more than just that fact I purchased a book. It's the fact that the book came with the virtual community or the virtual training, the Facebook community, and the one-on-one coaching, which, I don't know, man, you could charge thousands of dollars for that if you wanted to.
Well, we do. But we do those ones 20 to 30 minutes to give people an eye-opener because those you will get people, and we've had it. You know, it's a great lead magnet. Let's not joke about it. You will get a lot of people that go, hey, I really enjoyed this free coaching session, but I need you in my life for 6 months. And my starting rate is $28.50 a month. So we do charge thousands for those calls.
Yeah, but you do also put the chips on the little guy or the person that's just inquiring to make it all possible. Let's put the chips on everybody listening right now, because we already talked about this. You don't just buy a weight loss book and lose weight from the purchase. You don't That's just right. listen to my podcast and become a millionaire by, you know, falling asleep to me. Hopefully no one fell asleep to this one. High energy. We
hope not.
What's the next move? Based on what we talked about today, what's the next move? I mean, investing in the book's an easy peasy one. Let's not talk about that. What's a free move that we could do today to take all this information we talked about and actually start putting it into action right now?
Great question. So I do this with a lot of my coaching clients. And so I'm going to give it to everyone listening to this for free. This is how I start. I want you to get a crayon. I want you to get a Sharpie. I don't want you to get a pen or a pencil. I want you to get something that takes you back to being a kid. So if you can get a purple Sharpie or a green crayon, that's what I want you to do.
Can I do it on the sidewalk with some chalk?
Chalk is perfect.
Perfect.
And then what I want you to do is I want you at the top to write down 5 years from the date you're listening to this podcast. So if you're an idiot and you don't listen to this podcast for 5 years because you've only just heard who Ben is and you're 5 minutes, 5 years late to the party, just add 5 years from that date. So for us now, we're doing it on 2022. So we write down the number 2027.
It's good okay? math.
20, I know, I did that all on my own. 2027, we do at the top. Then underneath it, we go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then next to each number, we write a specific goal that we want to have achieved in 5 years. Now, I say specific. If you want lots of money, what's lots of money? Is it $273,000? Is it $495,000? Is it $1 million? You know, I want to pay off my house and my mortgage is $998,000. Whatever it is, I want this car. This is the color and the model. I want to travel here. This is the month I want to travel to, and that's where I want to be. I want this amount of money, and this is my mortgage, and I want that paid off. I want my credit cards paid off. This is the total amount that I need to pay that off. Be as specific as you can for those five goals. And then what you do, and this is beautiful, go back up to the top where that number was that year, cross it out, and write next year. Now, you'll be in a state of panic. You'll be like, well, when it was 5 years, I was okay to dream. I dared to dream. It's 5 years away. A lot can happen in 5 years. I may not even be on this earth in 5 years' time. But next year, shit, that's only 12 months away. And then what you do is you go, okay, what needs to happen in 11 and a half months for me to hit that 12-month goal? What needs to happen in 11 months, 10, 9, 8? What needs to happen tomorrow for me to get closer to that goal? And that's free of charge. And here's the beautiful thing, and I'm going to let you off the hook. You're more than likely not going to achieve everything. But this is what happens. And it's happened. It's happened many, many times. Been doing this for 20-plus years. If you give yourself five goals for 5 years and then move it to next year and then you push, you'll end up achieving two or three of those goals in 1 year. Over 50 to 60% of your five-goal plan has been achieved in 12 months. Mm. Not 5 years, in 1 year. You've achieved over half of your goals. I'll tell you what will happen. You'll write another five-year goal plan, go up to the top, cross it out, put 1 year, and you'll go again. And the growth will be exponential. Try that. It'll scare you by what you can achieve when you do it like that.
Exponential growth, exponential confidence, exponential leveling up is what it sounds like.
Yep.
Cool. One easy thing that'll take you 3 seconds is to smash subscribe on whatever you're listening to this right now, or you're watching at YouTube, and check out the show notes. I like to tell people, if you got the ability to open up another tab, open up the tab, do some of this stuff while we're chatting here, because I like to end easy peasy, rapid fire round, just to get to know you a little bit better. No hard question, just some fun stuff.
Dirt.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Favorite kind of animal?
I love dogs, but I also love laughing at pandas.
Laughing? Tell me more about that.
Pandas are just funny. I think they're just taking the piss on it pretty much every day. They're always rolling around and doing stupid shit. I love pandas.
We got a YouTube a panda video after this. Let's do a different one. Buck, TV, or movie character. Who is most like you?
Oh, Buck, gosh, truth. My wife thinks I'm Thanos because I look like Thanos and I like to destroy stuff. I think I like to disrupt stuff, but sometimes in disrupting, you end up destroying. So I suppose badly, I'm Thanos.
Now, that we're going to ask the same question in a different way because that's who you would play. But if we were to take an actor, what actor is going to play you and tell these stories for you?
Oh, what actor would play me?
Let's do that one.
Who knows? It would probably have to be... I would probably think it would have to be Brad Pitt from the movie Snatch. Because in Snatch,
yeah,
he played a really cool Irish boy. For any of you that haven't seen the movie Snatch, it's an incredible movie. And he plays this Irish boy. So I suppose he's better looking than me, marginally, maybe, maybe not. But I think it'd have to be Brad Pitt from Snatch.
Fantastic movie. That'll be in the show notes. Check it out. Wow. I think you answered all my questions for the day. I want to book you for another hour, but we don't have the time. How do we go deeper and learn more from you? Tell us one more time.
Oh, it's dead easy. Steve D. Sims, D for dashing, and there's only one M in Sims. Steve D. Sims. I'm at stevedsims.com. That's my website. Or Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Steve D. Sims. You can find me anywhere. I've got a free Facebook group called An Entrepreneur's Advantage with Steve Sims. But quite simply, as Ben already said, if you buy the book, you're getting the real stuff. So grab the book, look for the QR code inside, and play.
Rock and roll. Thanks. I'll have you back if you'll come in, but I appreciate your time today. It's been fun.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Thanks again for listening to Learn, Speak, Teach, powered by Balbert Marketing, LLC. You need to go subscribe if you haven't yet. This show is completely free. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Leave us a review on Apple, Google Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to the show. All right. Thanks once more for listening to LST. I am so grateful. Talk to you soon.
Hey, I'm Steve Sims, and I've just been on Ben's podcast, Real Business Connections. Great energy, great enthusiasm, great questions. You want to listen to a great show? You couldn't be better than listening to this one. Well done, Ben.